Welcome to RC Hangar Time, a podcast dedicated to the radio-controlled aviation hobby, where each week, our hosts discuss everything from airplanes to helicopters and everything in between.
All right, this is episode number 56 of RC Hangar Time. We've got usual guys with us today. So who wants to start us off? How about Wade? What have you been up to, Wade?
I've been working.
You work?
Yeah, and then flying.
Nice. What you been flying?
Things with wings, airplanes, multi-rotors. I've been flying a Cub, doing knife edges down the runway, pissing all the old planker guys off.
They would yell, "Land!" When you're pissing off planker guys while flying a planker.
Something's wrong. It's really funny when they yell "landing" and you fly by at a knife edge and you go "knife edging," and then they crash. Like, I couldn't hear you over the sound of my Power 60.
Nice.
Stupid heads. Anyways. Yeah, that's pretty much it. Just been working. Got my new gimbal in, so I'm working on setting that up. It was pretty much plug and play, but I got a couple things I want to do to make it work better, and that's pretty much it. So,
awesome. Sounds good. Who's next?
CPO.
I'll go. Let's see here. Got to the flying field actually a couple days this week, this weekend. Unfortunately, I didn't get much flying done on Saturday when we went because it was just miserably windy. Like the flagpole was bending over. So just didn't seem like a good idea. So we watched a couple guys. There was actually, it's kind of funny, and I hope they won't listen to this, I'm sure. But there were these three guys that were out there, and I have no idea who they were. They weren't part of the club. I think they were just, you know, visitors or guests or something. And they had brought out this little foamy plane. And it's windy. It's like, I don't know, 20 mile an hour, fairly steady wind with some gusts. Miserable conditions for flying. And these guys are out there with this Bixler style sort of a foamy. And it was to the point that when they took it out, and they would all three go out on the runway, stand out in the middle of the runway together and try and hand launch this thing into the wind. And everybody would kind of crowd around and just watch because we knew it was going to be a fun show. And they would fly for literally like 3 to 5 seconds before crashing into the ground. And they had this blue painter's tape, and they would just tape it all back together and then try again, 3 to 5 seconds down into the ground. It was very entertaining, but I took that as a sign that I probably should just leave my stuff in the car. So I literally didn't take anything out. I did fly the Dromeda Ominous a little bit. But it was so windy that it couldn't come back upwind. I could go downwind, no problem, but I couldn't. It didn't have enough power to come back upwind. It was just crazy. So we redeemed ourselves. My son and I went out today for a little while to the flying field and had a little bit of I call it a mental health day, where we just, you know, go out there and decompress. And I buddy boxed him on the 450 for a little while, a couple of flights on that. I flew the 550. I flew my Tucano. But it was still a little breezy. I didn't get the Sensei up. I took it out there as well, but it doesn't handle the wind nearly as well as some of those other things. But I've come to enjoy that the helicopters are the place to go when it's windy.
Right,
for sure.
When is the 700 maiden?
It's soon. It'll probably be next weekend. The reality of it is it's going to require me to be in a position where I can just go out and focus on doing the maiden, getting the video, all of that stuff that goes along with it. And we've had a lot going on in the household the last week. So we've had, you know, visitors over and, you know, guests and things like that. So I did get to the flying field today, but I decided not to try and maiden the 700 because I didn't want it to be work. I wanted to just go out there and just have fun flying with my son. So if I took the 700 out, I'd be, you know, here, you know, CJ, you got to run the camera, and, you know, it turns into a big deal. So I figured I'd save it for next week. And that may sound strange to most people, but I just wasn't in the mindset right now to do it with everything going on. So,
all right.
But it's ready. It should be done soon. I popped out a couple videos in the last week. For one, I did the programming video on the CGY750. I got that done. I do have a video that I'll release soon that's finishing up right now. It's the Scorpion ESC programming and configuration and how to do the calibration of the governor. So that stuff will happen soon. And then I worked on Search RC a little bit more. I added in a couple new features. I added a couple new sites. I had some requests for people have been contacting me to add more forums, which is cool because it's forums I've never heard of before that I wouldn't normally search that now are part of the search results. But I have a little checkbox now on Search RC that you can exclude certain sites from the search. And if you click it, you'll see everything is checked by default, and you can selectively uncheck things that you don't want to be part of the search results. So it's kind of cool. It's kind of an interesting way to filter, and it filters real time. So you check the box and it automatically adjusts the results with that one site removed. So it's kind of a good way to drill down and just see the different sites and how they work. But and then the other thing I added to that was a sort by date, which is kind of sketchy, to be honest with you, because Google doesn't have in their search index, they don't have a date field that comes back with the results. So the date is based on some magical date that they've assigned on the back end that they don't show you. And the problem is the way forums work is you'll have a forum container, like the page in general, the site will get an update, but within it are these, you know, threads that are old, but on updated pages. So I'd find things that, you know, I'd sort by newest and I'd still get results from like 2010 because, you know, the actual page Google says is up to date, but that's because they updated, you know, some other content besides the actual thread. So it's a little bit sketchy, but in some cases it works. I saw when I sort by date, I'll get some results from like, you know, the last day or two right up front, which is kind of handy, but it just doesn't always work. So, and there's not much I can do about it. Let's see what else. I tried to add video results from there, but that was kind of lame as well. I'm not real happy with that, so I pulled that out of the most recent release, and I'm gonna maybe come up with a plan B for that. But that's about it. It's been a long week for a lot of reasons, but I did get some RC stuff done, so that makes me happy.
Nice. Sounds good. How about you, Dustin?
Oh, I didn't do a whole lot of RC. We had fall break with the kids, so we kind of spent a long weekend messing around, getting out, going to the local amusement park, went up to Logan for a day. But I did maiden my mini VTEL, got it all buttoned up and took it around and flew it, had a good time with it. I really like it. I need to work out a few little bugs that I got going on, but I think they're all just, you know, adjustment, you know, nothing big, nothing part problems. I think it's just adjusting the gains different, or I may have to remount the KK2 board in that frame with some different vibration dampeners or something. I don't know. I still got some things to work out, but hopefully I'll get to that this week. But other than that, RC wise, I haven't done a whole lot, just that mini VTEL.
Nice.
How about you, Mike?
I haven't done much flying either. I did get a new quadcopter this week, though. I got a 250-sized little quad that I got from a buddy here in town, and been putting that together. So hopefully I'll have that going here this week and start doing some FPV and some racing with that. The goal is to do some FPV racing with that. I've got a few buddies that I've talked to here in town that either have quads or are in the process of building an FPV quad. So we're going to start putting together some kind of, you know, point series or racing series each month for FPV racing with quads or multi-rotors.
Cool. You're going to try to make sure that it doesn't get crazy like RC car guys?
Oh, yeah. That'll be interesting because I used to race RC cars, and, yeah, that gets pretty bad. No, we want to keep it fun and just entertaining. It's, you know, nothing for to be too serious or get too crazy with. I mean, of course we'll be competitive and want to be competitive and, you know, want to win, but we'll try to keep it fun too. And hopefully it'll take off good and we can get some more people involved. And maybe I'd like to get some wings going too and do some, you know, racing with some wings, FPV wings. I think that'll be a lot of fun too.
Yeah, that would be cool.
So, but other than that, I haven't done any, got a chance to do any flying. It's been, I was sick for, you know, 2 or 3 days last week, so I didn't do hardly anything this weekend. So I didn't have a chance to get out or anything. So hopefully this weekend will be a little bit better weather and get out and get that quad going and maybe fly the Bixer a little bit too.
Cool.
But that's it for me. Should we move on to some news?
Let's do it.
All right.
You're listening to RC Hangar Time. Please help support our show by going to rchangartime.com and clicking the donation tab. Your donations help keep the show running each week. And be sure to share this episode on Facebook or your favorite forum. Thank you for your continued support and enjoy the rest of the show.
I hear that you have some news, CPO.
I've got a few things of interest that I ran across over the last few days. One of them that really caught my eye was, you remember last week I reported this deal by the FAA where they canceled 91-57, and we had talked about the fact that not only did they put out a letter saying that they were going to cancel it, if you actually browse to the FAA website and looked up AC-9157, it said canceled. And we had had a discussion about how do they even have the authority to cancel it without, you know, somebody else, Congress or whatever, making that decision. Well, it turns out they recalled their cancel and put out a statement saying that they erroneously canceled that. So they have now recalled their cancel. They've canceled their cancel, and AC-9157 is back up on their website. Although they do specify they fully intend to cancel it. It's just apparently somebody finally realized they didn't have the authority to do so. So that's kind of funny. And oddly enough, the day after we reported, you know, maybe they were listening. Could be. Who knows? I'm sure that's maybe, what happened.
I'm sure that, you know, we do have a lot of FAA agents that do listen to the show.
Yes, I'm sure. Keeps us all safe.
Right.
All right. So something else I thought was cool in a geeky maker sort of a way. I found a Thingiverse thing on. I don't know if you're familiar with Thingiverse.com. I've got a 3D printer, so I tend to look at these 3D printable things every so often. And I ran across a completely 3D printable RC airplane that was posted this month, which is kind of interesting. I'm not sure how practical it is, but kind of cool that you can basically 3D print an entire airplane. And it comes, like, even the wings, it comes in three segments. Each wing has, you know, an inner, a center, and a tip, you know. So it basically prints in these smaller pieces, and then you glue them or somehow connect them together. But it's completely 3D printed, fuselage, wings, control surfaces, everything, which I thought was kind of interesting. So,
how big is this?
It is, trying to see if it says, there's a picture actually. It's on Thingiverse, and it's Thing 490515 for everybody listening if you want to go check it out. But it's a college student that did this, and I'm trying to see.
It's pretty big.
36 inch wingspan. That's what it is. It's bigger than I would have expected it to be. First of all, 3D printed, I'm thinking, you know.
Like 12.
Yeah.
It's built to run off a 2200 milliamp battery. I mean, it's not a little guy. It's pretty big.
It's like Bixler size, right?
I think the Bixler wingspan is closer to 50, ain't it?
Yeah, it's 42. Like 1900 millimeters, I think, is what it is. Yeah.
So 36 inch, it's a four servo, and it supposedly weighs flying weight at 26 ounces.
Are you going to make one?
I don't think I am because I don't have time to deal with it. but it looked interesting. So for somebody that doesn't have, you know, somebody that has unlimited time that wants to 3D print this just for fun, I think it would be a really cool project. But yeah, I have a hard enough time with things that come almost put together. But, you know, this thing comes in, what, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, oh, man, like, I don't know, 20 to 30 pieces when you get it all individually printed. And if you think about it, if you've never 3D printed something, that's like 6 hours to print one of these pieces, 6 to 8 hours. So, yeah, it'll be a while to just print them out. But cool nonetheless, and I think it's starting to show how the hobby is progressing, where we're manufacturing literally things in our homes. And I've seen a lot of cool stuff. Like, there's a guy that flies at my local club that has done some 3D printed parts for his racing quad, his FPV racing quad he has. And so his vibration dampening system for his camera, for example, is, you know, 3D printed plate and all this stuff, which is, you know, he prints it at the school. He's a student, but it's just really cool how, you know, these days we can just, you know, make our own parts. It's almost, you know, akin to having a CNC machine, but for those of us that just can't quite get the CNC thing running. So it's pretty interesting. And the last thing I'll bring up, actually two things, but the last news item really, which I thought was kind of interesting for several levels, is I saw a Business Insider article where they interviewed Chris Anderson, who's the CEO of 3D Robotics, talking about drones. And, you know, I hate that word, drones, particularly with the way it has a negative connotation. But there were a couple things about this interview that I thought were interesting. One of them is I did not know that the CEO of 3D Robotics, which, you know, I've got the 3D Robotics Pixhawk flight controller on my hexacopter. So I'm familiar with 3D Robotics as a flight controller, sort of a, you know, APM manufacturer. But I did not realize that this guy used to be the editor of Wired Magazine. And, you know, he's a book author. And he started DIY Drones, which I am familiar with. But I didn't know that was the same guy who is now running 3D Robotics. So kind of an interesting tie there. But he makes a couple distinctions in there that I thought was interesting. And one of them is he makes a distinction, according to his interview, his opinion of a drone is something that's autonomous, which I think is a good distinction to make, because we tend to throw drones out as this word that is all, you know, anything that flies remotely, you know, seems to be labeled as a drone these days. But I think there is some value in saying, look, Let's call radio control airplane a radio control airplane, and let's call something that flies autonomous without human input, maybe that's a drone. Right. But there is definitely a difference there that this article kind of talks about. And clearly the context of all this is with regard to getting video or aerial photography footage. It's not about just enjoying flying the aircraft. In this article, he clearly is distinguishing a drone is something that you use as a tool to get pictures or video, which I thought was interesting coming from somebody who's, you know, has built their business around providing, you know, this type of technology. So, and he said one thing that made me really think too, which is, there's a quote in here I'll give you from him. He says, YouTube created the GoPro boom and GoPro created the drone boom. And I had to think about that for a second, but I guess it's true. I mean, it makes sense to me. You guys agree with that statement?
Yeah, I'd say it's pretty. They're pretty, pretty well related and linked.
Yeah, I think they're hand in hand. I mean, that's. I don't think that started out as a GoPro thing, but now that everybody and their dog wants to put a camera in the air and get the next best shot, I think it's definitely. It's becoming that for sure.
Yeah, and to be fair, though, I mean, YouTube didn't just create the GoPro boom. YouTube created the handheld video camera boom, right? The yep. Videos on our iPhones has accelerated in use because of the ease in which we can share on YouTube. So I think it's a lot bigger than GoPro, but it's a general statement that's kind of, I don't know, if we're doing brand marketing here by using the terms GoPro specifically, but the reality of it is it's kind of they're feeding each other, which is kind of hit me as probably a true statement. So anyway, I just ran across that article and thought it was interesting. A few little tidbits there that I hadn't really considered before. And the last thing I will share is a personal project thing. So I hope you guys don't mind, but I am giving away on my my Everything CPO YouTube channel that we talked about a few episodes back. I'm nearing 3,000 subscribers, and I've been kind of approaching that number for a while, and I've made that my milestone number. And so I decided I was going to give away something when I hit 3,000 subscribers. And I got a great subscriber giveaway gift from Hobbyco and Futaba. They sent me a Futaba T8J transmitter with a R2008 S-Bus receiver. It's a combo kit, and it's the airplane model. So it's got a ratcheted stick, but I think you can fix that. You can change that out. And it's also got both airplane and heli model programming. But anyway, they've offered up this Futaba TAJ for me to give away at my leisure. And my leisure is going to be when I hit 3,000 subscribers. So the reason I'm calling this out is because I'm at 2903 as of this second. So I need 97 more subscribers, which at the rate I'm going will be just probably a week or so. So if you're interested in the giveaway and you're already a subscriber to my YouTube channel, then you're golden. Just watch for the next video that comes out that says, here's how to enter. And quite frankly, it's going to be, probably comment on the video, and then I'll scrape all of the users from the comments and then do a random drawing from there. And if you're not a subscriber and you want to be eligible, go subscribe and then watch for that video. But it won't be very long before I give that radio away. So just wanted to do that announcement and shout out to Hobbyco and Futaba for hooking me up with that great prize.
Sweet. Sounds good. I've got a few pieces of news I would like to share. I don't know if it's really new or not, but have you guys seen your quadcopter you have, the Dromada, how do you say it?
The Dromada?
The Dromada. Have you seen the small one that they just came out with that has a built-in camera?
I've got it right here.
I don't know when that came out. I just was in the hobby shop the other day, and it said new on the boxes and all that, and they just got him in. And there was like $60, and I almost bought one. I was so tempted to buy one, but I figured I'd hold off a little bit on that because it looks pretty cool, because it's got a little camera and an SD card and a little SD reader that you can go fly it around and, get video or pictures or whatever.
Yeah, this thing is awesome. So I've got it. I'm doing a review video on it probably in the next day or two. It's just about time right now for me. But I was skeptical, to be honest with you, because I've played around with some of these little, micro-sized quadcopters with built-in cameras, and I'm almost always disappointed. Either the quadcopter themselves are a little bit, janky, or the camera's really horrible. But this is actually so the quadcopter's awesome. It really is cool. Very stable. Has three different levels of flight modes. So you can change levels pretty quickly. It's got a push button flip, kind of like the Dromada Ominous does, but it will flip on a dime. This is truly an indoor little acrobatic. I mean, you can flip it in the space of, a foot. It nice. Really is tight. It flips nice and tight. And I did some video with it flipping, and it flips so fast. The video is just like, half a second of this rotation of the screen. And then it's right back again. So the camera footage is good. It handles low light and bright light fairly easy in the transitions. The one thing I did notice, which I'm still trying to learn with it, is it points down. The camera angle points down a little bit. So you want to be higher than you think you should when you're recording video, because I tried going like straight on, like a little bit above eye level, and looking back at myself, and I realized I only got my legs in the shot.
Nice.
So I'm going to have to redo some footage there, but it really is cool. So I'm becoming a big fan of the Dromada line of multi-rotors, just because so far, both of these items have been really awesome.
Nice. That's good to hear. Cool. I had a couple other things RC Hangar Time related. I wanted to give a shout out from the group since we haven't done that in a while. Steve Pruitt, he's building a Taub Dove. It's a stick build. He's building it just from a kit out of sticks. You know, you don't see that very often anymore. And this thing is coming together really nicely. It's a really awesome airplane. I don't know if you've guys seen it or not in the group, but this thing looks like it's going to be a really cool looking airplane.
I didn't see that one.
Yeah, it's the one that looks like a bird. It kind of looks like an actual dove. It's got the wings actually look like bird wings, and the tail looks like a tail from a dove.
When did he post it?
Just a couple days ago. I think it was over the weekend that he posted it up. He's been posting it for a while. He's been giving updates here and there. I mean, before it was just sticks, but now he's actually looks like he's got an actual airframe together now.
Nice.
Yeah, it's a really cool looking plane. So wanted to give a shout out to that because, you know, you don't see that very often anymore with people doing stick builds. Everything is, you know, foam or already ready to fly. You just put it together. So
yeah,
it's really cool. Yeah, even do that.
Even the formerly stick planes now are almost all, you know, it's so easy to find them in an R forum.
Yeah, they're already covered and you just got to put them together. Then my last little bit of news was the RC Hangar Time Flying Club. We're gaining a lot of members. People are joining almost daily on that. And we're adding them and getting them added in for the States and even people out of the country. We've had a few people out of the country, Australia, and some interest in Mexico from the last, I believe the last Heli Hangouts. He heard about this.
Okay, yeah. I talked a little bit about it on the Heli Hangout we had on Friday.
Yep.
So if it's Mexico, I know exactly who it is. It's probably Rifted who is joined in because he's my Mexico Heli Hangout regular. So shout out to him. Thanks for signing up.
So that's going good. I just wanted to mention that and, you know, keep it up. And, you know, we're working hard on getting this thing off the ground and building a good foundation for it. So other than that, that's about all I got. What about you, Wade and Dustin? You got any news?
I was just going to say real quick, due to we were talking about 3D printing and stuff. I don't know if you guys saw, but you can get a 3D printer ready to go from freaking Dremel, of all people.
Oh, yes.
At Lowe's.
For $1,000, is it? Something like that?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I haven't looked into it too much, but I did notice that was becoming available. I'm not sure what I think about that.
Yeah, I don't know. I think it's good. I don't think that I'm going to rush out and buy it, but I think it's good because what it's going to do is really drive the market. It's really going to start the competition for the cheapest, you know, most affordable way to grab a 3D printer. So I think within a couple of years we'll see them down in the $400 and $500 ranges, like for pretty big size one.
Yeah, I think it'll be where you walk into your local office supply store, and right next to the laptops, the smartphones, and the printers, you'll have 3D printers.
Yeah, that'll be awesome.
One thing I do like about that, though, is, I mean, it's kind of, it's plug and play. You just go pick it up, and it should be fairly seamless to get it running, you know. That's kind of like the flat printers and stuff like that. I'd really like to build a flat printer or a 3D printer, but I don't know, just to kind of invest that kind of money on I hope I get it together and everything works good, you know. Not that I've ever really had problems with stuff like that, but that's just a big chunk of money to just throw out there to say I'm gonna start, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah, it you know, and they're finicky too. Like, so I built, we have a Rigidbot, and, you know, we've got about $600 into this thing. And I built it, you know, it assembled fairly easy and it works, but it is a little bit finicky. I mean, I don't see like my wife or my son being able to run it. It kind of, there's this level of tinkering that you need to be at, that most 3D printer people already have. That's why they're playing with 3D printers. But when it becomes a consumer item, it has me worried that people are going to not be as successful with it because just the nature of the beast is they're a little bit finicky. You've got to have the right filament. You've got to feed it right. You've got to, you know, there's a lot of configuration, and even there's a lot of different options when you build your G-code file to put into the printer through the slicer that, you know, you kind of have to tinker with a little bit. So I'm wondering if they got it in a tinkerless sort of a form where it is really kind of plug and play and you just set it and make it run. So I'm hoping that's the case, but
looks like they have their own software, 3D Builder, Dremel 3D yeah. Builder. So
it's the 3D20-01 Idea Builder.
Yeah,
and it looks super easy. Like,
well, the cool thing is most of those stores have a great return policy. So well, might be like worth just checking out.
Well, what I was going to say is it's got like pre-installed extruders. I mean, it's got everything you need. Plus, it can be used standalone or hook up to a regular. I mean, it's freaking amazing. Like, it just, you can't beat that.
Yeah, it looks pretty sweet.
I mean, it's $1,000, but whatever.
It looks good too. I mean, it's in a nice package. It's, you know.
Yeah. Well, I was reading a little bit about it, and basically what it said is that it's got an online community that they put online. So like, you can go in and browse other people's creations, and if you want it, you can just click like, basically save that creation and print it out yourself. Like, it's amazing. How easy is that?
Yeah, that's cool.
Yeah, it looks nice actually.
Cool. Does anybody else got some news?
I got one thing that I wanted to touch on today. With all of the bad stories about drones and crap in the news, I don't know if you guys, have you guys seen SAR drones?
No.
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 Basically, this guy in California ended up using his Phantom for a search and rescue operation. And from his experience, he created this SAR drones website and what he's calling the Swarm. And basically what it is volunteer search and rescue with your drones. So some guys have Phantoms, some guys have, big gigantic octocopters. And basically what he's doing is he's building a network where you can volunteer, and he kind of, from what I saw in some of the videos I found about him is he kind of sees what kind of a pilot you are, and you kind of meet his criteria, and then he adds you to his Swarm list. And basically you become a volunteer search and rescue, you know, someone who will donate your UAV time to do search and rescue. So I thought it was pretty cool. He's got a ton of people. If you check out his site, I'll put it in the show notes, but if you check out his sites, he's got a ton of people in the U.S. He's got a ton of people outside the country. There's only one guy here in Utah that signed up and is on the approved list, but I just thought that was cool that somebody's actually taking this and making it into a positive thing. And of course, you're not going to see anything on the news about it, because it's not someone crashed their drone into a building, but it's pretty cool. I'll put the link. It's sardrones.org. And he's calling his group of members the Swarm, and they're just basically, like I said, volunteering their time. And the site was created by a guy named Jim Bowers. And I think I've actually seen a couple of his YouTube videos before this whole thing got set up, but I don't know. It was cool. I just thought it was, a positive spin on our hobby, somebody doing something good, with what we have.
Nice. Now, is that just for California, or you said Utah, but can, do they have search and rescue where you can do that in any state?
Yeah. So if you look at his list of his volunteer roster, he's got people in Africa, Argentina, Australia, Canada, Brazil.
So it is by state.
And what's then the website?
Sardrones.org. And then in Utah, or not in Utah, but in the U.S., he's got Alabama, Alaska, Arkansas, Arizona, California. There's a ton of people in California, Colorado, Connecticut, Delaware, Florida. I mean, the list just goes on and on. There only happens to be one guy in Utah where Mike and I are from, but
Who is this guy?
Aaron Kimball from Salt Lake City, Utah.
Huh. Yeah, I don't know him.
I've never heard of him either, but I mean, you know, hopefully this list grows big and, you know, it's something that somebody can turn to. I've seen a couple of news reports on, or when I did a little research on this, you know, there's some news articles where people have, you know, claimed to be a part of this swarm and they volunteered their time and they've helped people. Some guy found this old guy in a field of, I wanted to say it was soybeans or something like that. Another guy found a skier. It was just, you know, some cool stories, some positive stories coming out of, you know, the word drone and, you know, for our hobby. I just wish it was a little more publicized, but maybe we can get the word out and share it. It would be cool.
Nice. That's awesome.
That's cool. So I'm looking at his website on the frequently asked questions, and one thing that stands out, first of all, he's claiming in two different spots, two different stats, but basically over 1,000 to 1,100 members in 42 different countries, which is kind of cool.
Yeah.
But the one thing that stands out is says as of May 2014, we have over 1,000 members. So he's been doing this for a while, and I guess I'm surprised I haven't heard of it before now. Sounds like he's been active, you know, more than just, you know, recently, conceived in December 2013. So,
yeah, I was going to say this isn't just something that happened this month.
Right.
Yeah, it's happened. He's got a Facebook group. You know,
he should connect with RC Fly. Are you familiar with RC Fly?
Yeah.
So I don't see any reference to that on his site, but it sounds like they would make a great partnership because they're looking for volunteers to do just that sort of a thing. For the hobby, so.
Yeah, and the other thing that I noticed that I can't remember if it was in the FAQ page or where it was, but he's basically saying, you know, this is all voluntary. It's, you know, we've FAA can't touch us because we're all volunteers. We're volunteering our time. We're volunteering our equipment.
It's true.
So.
It's a hobby. It's a volunteer hobby. I mean, these guys are going out and doing what they like as a hobby. They're helping people in the progress. There's no way to get shut down unless they're posing a risk to people. You know what I mean?
Yeah. The only thing that I saw that the FAA would, you know, touch on this is FPV. You know, if they do get their interpretation passed, you know, there's some guys doing some FPV stuff here. But, you know, other than that, I mean, it's awesome. Like I said, he's taking a bad thing and he's putting a good spin to it. So.
And I'm sure he's probably there are probably a lot of guys who are flying line of sight and they have FPV camera operators.
Yeah. Yeah. But if you look on his page, he's kind of got a scrolling slideshow of some of the guys that are on there. I don't know. Some of the guys are like phantom guys. And then there's guys seriously are holding these like big, huge multi-rotor setups. It's pretty cool. It's not just, you know, hey, let's go buy a phantom and go do search and rescue. I mean, he's got some big, big multi-rotors out there.
I can't do the phantom thing. Ugh, I can't even be associated with them.
We should rename them iDrones. Then we'll all hate them even more.
iDrones. No, that's the only thing worse than that is a parrot.
Oh, yeah, well. You know, the sad thing is I really wanted a parrot at one time, but
yeah, when
now
they
I
first came out, I was like, oh, I want one bad. But
yeah.
I'm so glad I didn't buy one.
Me too.
If you guys click on his link too on the gear gallery, I don't know if you hit that link. There's not very many things in there, but there's guys flying wings and, you know, some guys flying some. There's a guy filling a Chimera there. Yeah, there's all kinds of cool stuff. So it's not just multi rotors too. So if anybody's interested in signing up, you know, it looks like he's accepting anybody who can carry a camera and do some type of search and rescue mission.
Sweet. Sounds good.
That's all I've got.
Do we have any more news, or should we move on to our main topic?
Yeah, let's move on to the main topic.
All right, sounds good to me.
This episode of RC Hangar Time is brought to you by SimpleCopter.com, makers of simple, rugged, and unique multi-rotor frames. Are you tired of having to replace an entire frame when you only break an arm? Or are you done with having a frame that looks like everyone else's? Then you need to go to Matt Hall's SimpleCopter.com. You'll find unique tricopter and quadcopter frames. They're simple, rugged, for flyers of all skill levels. And being that they're made up from wood, you can paint them to any color you choose. and they're cheap and easy to fix as well. So go to www.simplecopter.com right now and order your new frame today.
All right, so this week episode is Winter is Coming. We all know, especially, you know, the guys of us that live in the mountains and get a lot of snow, it's coming very soon. So, you know, we're going to talk about, you know, flying in the winter, you know, winter maintenance, what we need to do for the winter maintenance for, you know, those of us that do winter maintenance, and how to take care of, you know, lipos if you're flying in the winter and in cold conditions and that kind of stuff. So, you know, I know that Wade, he don't deal with the winter. He just flies. Right, Wade?
I fly even in the wintertime, even when it's snowing. So this off-season crap you all talk about is just ridiculous.
Yeah, but you don't have to deal with 2 feet of snow and, you know, below zero conditions either.
I did in Missouri, but not so much here in Texas. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to let you guys just talk about this, and I'm just going to leave.
Okay. We'll see you tomorrow.
I'm getting ready to go flying, actually.
Nice. Get out of here.
But anyways, how about you in CPO? In Maryland, I'm sure you get plenty of snow out there.
We do. It's not nearly as bad as I had it in Colorado, of course, but we do have winter here. There's definitely a season. I'm trying to think. So I've only been in the hobby really for one full winter because I got in December of 2012, January 2013. So my first winter in the hobby was building my first helicopter, and I'm, you know, was maidening it, you know, later in the season. But then after that, I went through a full winter, and you know, I really haven't thought much about, honestly, about cold weather flying so much because up until recently, I used to just go fly in my front yard. I've got about an acre of unobstructed bare land in my front yard. And so I was flying things just around in the front yard. So I didn't think much about, you know, battery temperatures or what I need to take to the field or anything. I just take a fresh battery at room temperature, go outside, fly with it. When it drains, I bring it back into room temperature. And if it's just too cold, I don't fly. So that's changing now, though, because I'm flying things that are much more large and require a little bit more space. So I have to start thinking a little bit more about what to do, you know, away from the front yard. So I'm really interested in this topic because I know that it's getting cooler even here. But I don't think we're going to see the same extremes you guys have in Utah. When does it really start getting cold there to the point where you're making decisions to not go outside anymore because it's cold?
Tomorrow.
Yeah. Tomorrow. Normally it would be about October time, this time of year, but we've been unusually warm this year, in my opinion. But usually, you know, through December, January is definitely the coldest that I've been out to the fields. I mean, last year we went out to the field and there was about a foot of snow on the ground, and I remember it was 18 degrees. And you know, my buddy flies a nitro helicopter, and it was a pain to get that thing started. I mean, you know, if you've ever flown nitro in the cold, it's definitely takes some work to get it started and going and then keep it going. So there's a lot of tuning involved, especially if you're still going to fly nitro in the winter. So there's a lot of stuff that you got to worry about just other than your lipos. I mean, lipos are going to be your big thing because most people are going to fly electric. So keeping them warm and not letting them get cold, you don't want to leave them out in that cold environment without them running or while they're not being used, because you can damage those lipos.
Yeah. That's kind of like my biggest thing too, is, you know, I tend to put some things away for the winter. I don't fly as many multi-rotors. I kind of get my planes out. When I transport to and from the hobby field or the fly field or the park or whatever, I try to keep all my batteries someplace where they're going to stay warm. I usually carry them actually in an insulated foam box, like a Pelican case that has some foam. I don't take as many batteries with me to the field. I don't charge them while I'm at the field. I'll just carry what I'm going to fly and then I'm done. But, you know, kind of the same thing as it. If I got a battery with me, I try to keep it in my back pocket to keep it warm, because you tend to lose some performance too when those batteries get cold. So
yeah, for sure. Now, do you fly when you fly out in the cold? Do you use one of those transmitter gloves? Do you know which ones I'm talking about?
I do. I've never have. I've wanted to buy one, but you know, you start thinking about that about, like, you know, the middle of January, and then they're always out of stock, and then by the time they do come in stock, it's, you know, the end of February, and then you're like, oh, it's warm outside, so you kind of forget about them. So maybe that's something I should look at before we get going.
Right. All right, nope. So right now, just stop what you're doing and go buy a transmitter glove while they're in stock.
I should, yeah.
Because after this show airs, they're going to be out of stock soon.
Because these transmitter bags are pretty nice. I mean, they'll fit your whole transmitter in it, and then it's got some holes that you put in the side. And they really do keep your hands warm while you're flying, because if you've ever tried to fly with gloves on, it's really difficult. It's hard to feel the stick, so I can't fly with gloves. I don't know about you guys, but it's almost impossible for me to fly with gloves on. So I don't have a transmitter bag either, so I usually just kind of tough it out while I'm flying. But I mainly, during the winter, I usually just do FPV. I'll go out and fly a few packs in FPV, go out up in the mountains and get some snowy shots or whatever, and call it a day. I don't go out to the field and sit out the field all day. But I do know some friends that are hardcore heli guys, and they're out there with their canopies or their tents with the, you know, the Bunsen burners going and fires, and they're all into it.
You know, the winter flying stuff that I've done, I for some reason my hands don't really get cold, and usually when I go out, it's usually a nice day. I don't try to fly when it's super cold, and you know, when I'm pushing maybe the weather, or I hate it when things start to get, you know, melt, and then things are all really wet. So those are the days that I try to avoid, just because, you know, I know, like, your motors, your motors are okay getting wet. Your ESCs, you know, you can bundle them away in the fuselage. But you know, if you're scratch building stuff, then your Dollar Tree foam board needs to be waterproofed, or, you know, it's just a little bit tougher. It's another dynamic to the whole, you know, to the whole hobby, I guess. I tend to pick up fly fishing more during the winter than I do RC stuff too.
That's a little bit colder though, ain't it?
Yeah, but that's also the best. It's always the best time to fish.
That's right, and that's what I was going to bring up about flying in the winter too. Usually the air is really calm, especially here in Utah when, you know, it's winter time, and a lot of the guys, you know, that do DLG and that kind of stuff, you can get into some really nice thermals, and it's really nice flying, and the air is different, especially for helicopters. You know, it's definitely a lot of fun trying to get out and fly in the elements, and I mean, not necessarily the elements, but a little bit colder, and the air is a little bit different and denser, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I like flying in the cold weather because of that. It's just super still and kind of crisp.
Right.
I like, and for FPV footage, I mean, there's nothing better than FPV video of, like, snow on the ground and the contrast with the bright, you know, sky and all that. So going back a little bit with gloves, I bought some of those fingerless gloves with the mitten that comes over the top.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll pull the tops off, you know, and then because I pinch when I fly for the most part. And it had the little thumb. So my thumb would be exposed and my index finger would be exposed. And I would fly like that. And then, you know, when I'm done, I just put the mittens back on. And that seems to work okay for me. But, you know, I'm kind of the opinion, kind of like what you were saying, that there becomes a point where I just make a decision where the temperature's not conducive to me going out and flying. Same thing, I make a decision about the wind when I look and see if I want to go fly. At some point I just may decide it's too cold and it's not worth the trouble, or there's too much snow on the ground. But one thing I did notice, and I wanted to mention if you guys had any experience with this, but I have a Rev Electric's battery, a PowerLab 8, and one of the things that has built into it is this capability that's called cold weather mode, and it basically reduces the charging termination voltage. Instead of, 4.2 volts per cell, I think it reduces it to 4.1 volts per cell, because when it's cold, you don't want to put a full charge on it. And I don't have much experience with that, but I just know that I have a charger that knows how to handle that. But have you guys, are you familiar with why you wouldn't want to charge a battery fully when it's below a certain temperature? Other than, obviously chemistry, something tells me it's bad, but.
Right. I don't. I've never used that feature or tried that feature. Maybe Dustin has.
I haven't either, but I know that, the way that a chemistry of the battery works is it's meant to discharge. So actually charging a battery is going against everything that it's
believes in.
So, and I know environment, like too hot or too cold, can affect the way that your battery performs or the way you charge or discharge. And so I would think it's the same thing, just kind of it's easier on the battery. I don't know. That's just kind of my thought on it.
Yeah. I always just bring them back in room temperature and charge them up. But, like I said, that might change. I might find myself in the field this fall, running a generator with my charger, trying to keep things going for a while. But,
with me, I don't like to charge my packs when they're hot. So if I just ran them I always let them sit before I try to charge them back up. And then the same thing is if they're cold, I don't mess with them either. I wait till they become room temperature before I do anything with them.
Yeah, so maybe throw them in the car with the heater on, let it warm up a little bit.
Yep. So what about some maintenance? What kind of winter maintenance do you guys do? Do you guys do any winter maintenance?
I do none.
I usually try to crash everything right before I put it away for the winter so that
you'll have something after to do.
I just replace all the parts.
Nice.
But, as far as like my batteries, I usually, like right now, I'm not recharging my batteries. There's a few batteries that I am charging, but like I got a pile of batteries that I've ran down to their storage voltage. So my three cells are at 11.1, my four cells are at 14.1 or 14.2.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'll just let those stay that way, for the winter. I try not to leave my packs full charged, if they're going to be sitting, and then I just kind of plan accordingly. So if I'm going to go fly tomorrow, then I'll charge some packs. And then if I can't get through all my packs, I'll bring them back and I'll put them on a discharge cycle.
Right. And that's good maintenance for LiPos in general. If you're not going to use them for, a few days or a few weeks or whatever, I usually just throw mine into storage mode. Every digital charger nowadays has a storage mode in it. You just put it on storage mode and it'll charge it or discharge it to that storage voltage per the cells that it is. And that's a good point. During the winter, if you're not going to be flying for, I'm not going to fly my helicopter for the winter, I'll take all my six cells and throw them in storage mode and then put them somewhere in the house where they're going to stay at room temperature. I won't leave them. Don't leave them out in the garage where it's cold or, next to the fireplace where it's hot. You know what I mean? Just leave them in a controlled environment where, when you're ready to charge them by the springtime or whatever, they're going to work just fine for you.
That's an interesting point because I do the same thing. So that's why I'm having a hard time grappling with winter maintenance, because I do those things just continuously anyway. If I'm not going to be flying, everything's in storage levels. But one thing that I have read is that it's better to store your batteries cold. So guys will put them in the refrigerator.
I've read that too, but I never got a definitive answer on that, whether that was actually good or bad for it. As far as I heard, that it was kind of a wives' tale, so I'm not too sure on that one.
Here's the thing: I think I don't keep them in a hot place. I keep them in my basement in my office where it's cooler. But I would think that if you're putting them in the fridge, you could possibly have some condensation problems. So mm-hmm. when you bring it out and you heat it back up to room temperature, how can you control that? I went from 35 degrees in the fridge to, you know, 70 degrees in the house and not have a condensation buildup on your battery.
Or couldn't that cause corrosion on the leads too?
Yeah.
Your connectors.
Yeah, I personally would, you know, I don't mind keeping them in a nice cool place in the house, but yeah, I wouldn't keep them outside. Here in Utah, it gets way cold out in the garage, but
for sure.
I wouldn't keep my batteries in the fridge personally.
For sure. And as far as, you know, maintenance goes, I was kind of more leaning towards, you know, what do you do to your aircraft that's going to sit, like say you have a nitro, you know, go through the motor or the, you know, the fuel lines, that kind of stuff. So normally during the winter, if I put a bunch of flights on my nitro heli, then I'll tear down the motor, check the rings and the piston and the sleeve and go through all the hoses and everything and change those out so that, you know, that there's no air leaks in those and that kind of stuff.
Yes, I don't fly any nitro. Everything I do is electric. But during the winter months is usually when I try to, like I said, if I crash something or I rebuild it, I do a lot of scratch building. So, you know, I rebuild stuff or, you know, like say with your Bixler, you cut the nose off and built a camera mount, you know, maybe I did something like that and I didn't like it. So it's a chance for me to rework something like that. You know, I always check like my linkages, you know, I just kind of general, like little maintenance, and it's stuff that I try to do throughout the year. But, you know, when you seem to be a little more meticulous about it when you can't go out and fly. So, you know, I don't pull my motors apart and, you know, check bearings or anything like that. But,
yeah, there's not much need on electrics.
Yeah. I know some guys pull the bells off of their motors and there's some different types of putties. You can kind of pull the filings and stuff out to kind of clean it up and blow things out of the stator. Some guys will, you know, actually give them a bath and then re-dry the stator and pull the bearings out and, you know, re-grease or re-oil the bearings. But, you know, I've never had to do that. Maybe someday I will, but
yeah,
I'm also flying, you know, some of the stuff I fly is park size stuff. So I don't really have to worry about replacing a $100 motor. You know, most of the stuff I buy is usually $25 or less. So if it's dead, you know, or if I kill it, it's not that big of a deal.
Yeah. But, I mean, I specifically avoided buying or getting into nitro and gas for those maintenance issues that I think, Mike, you're kind of talking about, which is, you know, on the electrics, you know, I try and maintain them as I go, but I don't feel like I need anything special to be done to them, you know, for the winter season. My planes, I'll just hang up, you know, in the rafters and pull them down whenever I decide I want to fly them. But
It's
a good time to do projects. I'll probably build something new or maybe rebuild something that I've been wanting to tweak on. Because it'll be too cold to drive out to the field.
Right. That was my next thing I was going to bring up too is builds for the winter. If you know, planning a build, I mean, that's a great time to do a build because you can sit in the house or the warm garage and, you know, work on something, get it ready to go and take your time on it.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. I seem to build, I really, other than this little detail, I really haven't built a whole bunch through the summer because I'd rather go fly.
Right.
But during the winters when I kind of, you know, I build, like I said, I build a ton of scratch build stuff. So I'll build some Dollar Tree flight test stuff or Dollar Tree. Did I say that right? Some of the flight test stuff that you use the Dollar Tree foam and, you know, some of those things. And like, the other thing is, I guess, is spend time on sims. So not only do you do maintenance on your aircraft, but it's a good time to refresh your skills and try new things. And
yeah, that's definitely a great point and great thing to bring up because you don't want to, you know, lose your edge or, you know, when you get back to flying in the spring or the summer or whenever you get back into it again. If you do take time off during the winter, it's good to keep up on the sim, right?
Yeah. So other than the nitro, like, do you have any problems with, like, fuel? Does fuel gel up in the winter? Or, I mean, is it time, you know, you got to try to get through your last gallon of fuel for the winter? Does that stuff go bad? Or
It will not necessarily go bad or gel up. I haven't noticed any of that, but it will evaporate. So you don't want to leave it outside in the garage or where it's hot and cold all the time, you know. So what I do is I just – and you don't want sunlight on it either. The rays from the sun will also make it evaporate. So I put it in a closet downstairs in the basement or whatever, under the stairs, you know, just kind of keep it out of the sun. But it's also inside the house in a dark area, and it's in a controlled environment temperature-wise. So it's not going to evaporate. And I've had put a gallon away for – you know, the fall, and then I've used it again the next spring and haven't had any issues with it.
How about transmitter maintenance? Do you guys do any kind of maintenance on your transmitter?
I haven't. No, I usually keep mine in a case.
Yeah, same with me.
But, you know, I have noticed that when I go flying, like, FPV and stuff, that I really don't like taking my JR-11X out there because I'm obviously going up into the mountains and it's dirt or mud, and I do find that sometimes my gimbals get a little bit crunchy. So this year I think that I might find a new, just strictly FPV transmitter, and then throw a Dragon Link on it. That way I don't have to worry about my 11X taking it out in the elements and the dirt, and the, you know, don't have to worry about dropping it in the snow or whatever, you know what I mean?
Oh, you're building this up. You're gonna buy a Trannis, aren't you?
You're
breaking into it.
I don't know. I don't know. I actually have a radio that I bought last year when I was really big into FPV that I was just going to gut it and put a Dragon Link in it. It's the Turnigy 9X or whatever. Is that right?
9XR.
It's just the basic one. It's not that really fancy, crazy looking one.
Does it have modules on the back?
Yeah, it's got a module on the back.
So there's two Turnigies. There's the 9X and the 9XR and the 9X. Actually, there's three. The 9XR Pro now.
Okay, so it's just the basic 9X. It was like the cheap $40, $50 one that I bought off of Hobby King. And I can take the module out, but then you got to, you know, put the Dragon Link in and solder in some wire or something.
You should just slap in a Easy UHF. It's the same thing. You're using 433 megahertz and you're going to get the same distance, and you're going to save yourself half the cost of a Dragon Link.
Really? I haven't heard of this one, so maybe you'll have to send some links to me.
Yeah, look at Stone Blue. He's got the Easy UHF stuff, and you can get OpenLRS and all that stuff off of, you know, other sites. There's a ton of it out there, and if you got the Photaba module bay on the back, you can just slap one of those in there. It'd be really easy for you.
Yeah, it's on the back. It's got the whole module that just slides right out.
Yeah.
You can pop a new one in or whatever. So that was my main reason of buying that last year. I just never got around to ordering a long range system. So, but I don't know. The Trannis is definitely tempting, but I don't know. I think
so. I've got a Trannis and I've got a 9XR.
Okay.
The 9XR I did not like, and then I liked it, and then I got the Trannis, and then I realized I hate the 9XR. The Trannis is a fantastic radio. I use it right now for my 450 heli. I use it for my tricopter. I use it for my Bixler. I use it for my hexacopter. The bang for buck number one on Free Sky receivers is fantastic, but I just like the programmability of the OpenTX system. I could pretty much do anything with it. I can run, you know, DSM-2, DSM-X with it, so I can do my micro bind and flies from you know, Blade or whatever. A 9XR first, and now I'm using that as a buddy box to my Trannis for my son. So my son, we were out today, as a matter of fact, flying the 450, which is using the Trannis, and he's connected to me via cable using the 9XR, and it's a big transmitter. I actually have held the 9X, the standard version, and I like it a lot better. It feels better in the hands. So between those two, I think you got the right one, the older 9X, I think. Yeah. But honestly, the Taranis is a fantastic radio and is head and shoulders above the Turnagees in all regards. But, you know, with that said, when I fly my bigger helis, the 550 and now coming up the 700, I'm flying Futaba on those.
Exactly.
And I really like my Futaba 8FG. It's not that I don't trust the Taranis. I just really like the way the Futaba feels. But the Taranis is very close second to that.
I think the kind of the nice thing about that Turnagee 9XR or even, you know, Taranis is pretty cheap. It's like you said, if you take it out into the mountains and do FPV and it's snowing, or, you know, if it starts to snow or you drop the radio in the snow, I mean, if you drop that Turnagee 9RX, I mean, what are you out, $50 plus shipping?
Yeah.
You know, the Taranis would be a little bit harder on your pocketbook, but yeah, that's kind of another cool thing is, you know, you can be out very little if you took it out in the rain or snow and messed it up.
The cool thing about the Taranis.
Oh, go ahead.
I was just going to say the good thing about the Taranis is all the built-in telemetry that comes along with it, which you don't have with the 9X or the 9XR. You can mod them to get that, right? I mean, you can do some mods, but
yeah.
The Taranis comes by default. And in, you know, most of the, you know, we're talking $30, $40 receivers that are fully, you know, fully functional with telemetry capabilities is pretty hard to beat.
Yeah.
Right.
And it's all, you can buy a million parts for it. So if you drop it in the snow and mess it up, yeah, you just go buy some new parts for it.
Nice. Yeah, I'm might lean that way and just keep the 9X and let the, you know, the fiance's kids have that 9X and let them fly something with it, you know, and then I'll use the Taranis or something maybe for FPV. I don't know yet. We'll see.
Yeah. Well, then turn that 9X, like I did, turn that 9X into your student radio for buddy boxing.
Yeah.
It's always nice to have a second one around.
Yeah,
for sure.
So back to batteries real quick. I did find a table. I was kind of poking around a little bit while we were talking because I couldn't remember where I saw something about storing in the refrigerator. And this isn't exactly what I found, but I did find a table. And I've been kind of hesitant to talk about it because I don't necessarily know the source of where this information comes from. So I'm always a little bit leery. But I found it in several different posts on Run Rider and RC groups, the same sort of a thing posted. And it's on LiPo storage, apparently by battery engineers. But again, I haven't really been able to run down the actual source. I just keep seeing it getting replicated without a source. But it says the speed by which lithium-based batteries ages is governed by temperature and state of charge. The following table illustrates that we can get the most prolonged life from LiPos when they are stored in the cool place with a 40% charge. The most harmful combination is full charge at high temperature. Of course, we know that.
Mm-hmm.
And it says, you know, this is the case when placing a LiPo in a hot car or whatever. And the table that goes along with this basically shows a temperature of, you know, in Celsius, 0, 25, 40, and 60. And in Fahrenheit is 32, 77, 104, and 140. And it shows basically how much percentage of battery capacity you'd have after 1 year. And the highest capacity after 1 year is storing it at 40% charged at a temperature of 32 degrees Fahrenheit or 0 degrees Celsius. They're saying in this you get 98% of your capacity. Whereas if you store at 40% charge at 77, you're getting 96% of your capacity. So point being is it does seem like you have an improvement. Again, I don't know the source of this information, but if it's accurate, let's just assume it is. You're getting 2% more capacity by charging it in a refrigerator or a freezer versus room temperature. But it's only 2%, so I don't even know if I'd notice. You know, it was a few seconds worth of flight time.
Right.
Not even sure it's worth the debate, really. But it does look like at least it's not harmful and perhaps could be a benefit. And the contrast of that is if you leave it in your car at, let's say you leave a battery in your car, 100% charge, you're going to go fly. And you end up leaving it in the car for some reason, leave it in the trunk. And it's 140 degrees in your trunk in the middle of the summer. You've got 60% of your capacity after 3 months. So heat is a killer. But cold doesn't seem to be a problem as long as it's not fully charged. So it's an interesting table.
Well, I'm sure we'll have more discussions about winterizing as the months get colder, for sure.
Yeah, for sure, yeah.
Cool. Yeah, I think we've touched on all bases. We can go ahead and wrap this up.
I got one more thing.
Oh, go for it.
Here, it was something we haven't talked about. I was thinking about it today. I don't know if you saw my picture I posted on the RC Hangar Time group on Facebook. But I was out at the flying field realizing that we have an enclosed clubhouse that is it's a wood structure with plexiglass windows all the way around. It's got sliding barn door type things. And I'm thinking that's going to be nice in the wintertime to be able to have a place that is outside of the elements, or I guess inside of the elements, however you want to call it, protected from the elements, where you can go and do your setup and store your stuff and all of that. And my understanding is they bring in space heaters and propane heaters in the wintertime when everybody's out there on the weekend. So I don't know, this is my first club, but do a lot of clubs have these sort of enclosed areas?
Not here in Utah. I mean, they have like carports, but no enclosed.
Yeah, they got carports, and the one field down in Lehigh that I fly at, they've got an actual wood burning stove by the carport. And then Heli field, there is no covering, but they've got big 50-gallon drums where we'll throw wood in there and just burn. Just kind of huddle around the 50-gallon drums like a bunch of bums.
Nice. So I guess I consider myself very lucky then that I found a club that has an enclosed clubhouse.
Yeah, for sure. That's awesome.
That's cool. So yeah, this will be my first winter to experience that. So I'll let you know how it goes.
Yeah, for sure.
Nice.
Cool. Well, I just wanted to say one thing before we wrap it up. And maybe during this winter, we can do some kind of get some people involved in some building during the winter for those that don't do much flying, and see what kind of builds we can come up with in the group.
Yeah, that'd be cool.
Maybe put something together, see if we can't, get some kind of a prize or giveaway for that, and see if we can get something going for that. I think that'd be a lot of fun, because I know I'm interested in building a few things that I would like to do.
Cool.
Yeah.
Let's do it.
Sounds good to me. You guys got anything else to add?
No, I'm good.
You've been listening to RC Hangar Time, a podcast dedicated to the RC aircraft hobby. For more info, you can go to our website at www.rchangartime.com or look for us on Facebook at RC Hangar Time. And if you have any questions, please feel free to email us. For Mike, it's mike@rchangartime.com. For Wade, that's wade@rchangartime.com. Dustin, you guessed it, dustin@rchangartime.com. And for TJ, it's crash@rchangartime.com. What the heck? Anyways, again, thanks for listening, and keep flying.